ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋಪಿನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಕುಂಡ ರಾಧಾ ಕುಂಡ ಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧನ್ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಶ್ರೀ ವೃಂದಾವನ್ ಮಥುರ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಜಯ. ಶ್ರೀ ಮಾಯಾಪುರ್ ನವದ್ವೀಪ್ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಜಯ. ಪುರುಷೋತ್ತಮ ಕ್ಷೇತ್ರ ಶ್ರೀ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಜಯ. ಇಸ್ಕಾನ್ ಶಿಕಾಗೋ ನ್ಯೂ ಸೇವಕುಂಜ್ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಜಯ. The most merciful Lordship Shri Shri Kishore Kishori ki jai. Shri Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai. Shri Shri Gaura Nitai ki jai. Ganga Mai Yamuna Mai ki jai. Bhakti Devi Tulasi Maharani ki jai. Shri Harinam Sankirtan Yagya ki jai. Hare Krishna Mahamantra ki jai. Nitai God Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. Glories to him.
ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀಪಾಪನಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಗಚರ್ಯಾಶ ಪುರುಷತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾರಿ ಶುಭಾಂಗ್ರೀಶ್ ऐसे भक्तिवान तो स्वामी कृपार की राजग्रंथ श्रीमा भागवतम की सामवेद भक्त वृंद की मिथाय गौप्रमंदी ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय एवं कृपनया भूत्या शोचन्तम् अथर्अर्हणम् ग्रहीतुं कृतधीरेनम् भयनामभ्यपाद्यत एवं कृपनया भूद्या शोचन्तम् अथर्अर्हणम् ग्रहीतुं कृतधीरेनम् भयनामभ्यपाद्यत एवं कृपनया भूद्या शोचन्तम् अथर्अर्हणम् ग्रहीतुं कृतधीरेनम्
Mothers. Evam, thus, Kripanaya, by miserly, Bhudya, intelligence, Shonchantam, lamenting, Atat Arhanam, on which he should not have lamented, Grahitum, in order to arrest, Kritadhi, the determined king of the Yavanas, Enam, him, Bhayanama, whose name was fear, Abhyapadyata, came there immediately. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. Although King Paranjana should not have lamented over the fate of his wife and children, he nonetheless did so due to his miserly intelligence. In the meantime, Yavana Raj, whose name was fear itself, immediately drew near to arrest him. Purport, foolish people do not know that every individual soul is responsible for his own actions and reactions in life. As long as a living entity in the form of a child or a boy is innocent, it is the duty of the father and mother to lead him into a proper understanding of the values of life. When a child is grown, it should be left up to him to execute the duties of life properly. The parent, after his death, cannot help his child. A father may leave some estate for his children's immediate help, but he should not be overly absorbed in thoughts of how his family will survive after his death. This is the disease of the conditioned soul. Not only does he commit sinful activities for his own sense gratification, but he accumulates great wealth to leave behind so that his children may also gorgeously arrange for sense gratification. In any case, everyone is afraid of death, and therefore death is called bhaya, or fear. Although King Paranjana was engaged in thinking of his wife and children, death did not wait for him. Death does not wait for any man. It will immediately carry out its duty. Since death must take away the living entity without hesitation, it is the ultimate God realization of the atheists who spoil their lives thinking of country, society, and relatives to the neglect of God consciousness. In this verse, the word Atat Arhanam is very significant, for it means that one should not be overly engaged in welfare activities for one's family members, countrymen, society, and community. None of these will help a person to advance spiritually. Unfortunately, in present-day society, so-called educated men have no idea what spiritual progress is. Although they have the opportunity in the human form of life to make spiritual progress, they remain misers. They use their lives improperly and simply waste them thinking about the material welfare of their relatives, countrymen, society, and so on. One's actual duty is to learn how to conquer death. Lord Krishna states the process of conquering death in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 9. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatutaha tyaktva deham punarjanma naitimam eti sorjuna. Quote, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. End quote. After giving up this body, one who is fully Krishna conscious does not accept another material body, but returns home back to Godhead. Everyone should try to attain this perfection. Unfortunately, instead of doing so, people are absorbed in thoughts of society, friendship, love, and relatives. This Krishna consciousness movement, however, is educating people throughout the world and informing them how to conquer death. Harim vina nashritim taranti. One cannot conquer death without taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. Om agyant mirandasya gyanajana shalakaya chakshuru mulitamina tasmai shri guruve namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanja Kaputuru Vyashcha Kripa Sindhu Vyareva Chapatita Nampavane Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadahar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we're hearing about the state of Paranjana's consciousness at the time of death, and the idea is that we may learn some lessons of what not to do so that we might be successful in conquering over death. So it's being mentioned here, the translation says, although King Paranjana should not have lamented over the fate of his wife and children. So Prabhupada is discussing a lot on this word Atat Arhanam, which means which one should not lament. Shochantam means he's lamenting Atat Arhanam for something which he should not be lamenting over. So that reminds us of a verse of Bhagavad Gita, Ashochan Avashochas Twam Pragambadam Shabashase Gatasum Zagatasum Cha Nanusum Chanti Panditaha. So Krishna opens up the Gita with a chastisement of Arjuna, that you are speaking like a learned man, just like everyone in the material world, they are suffering, but everyone is unhappy, but they will advise others how to be happy. This is one thing that you'll find in the material world, there's always plenty of advice. There's always sufficient guidance in the material world from all the jivas. They're always ready, prepared to give most learned expert advice. So Krishna is chastising Arjuna for this. You're speaking like a pandit, like a big, big learned person. But you are not a pandit. You are actually the opposite. You are a pandit. You are not learned. Why? What is the indication that you are not learned? You are lamenting for something that is not worthy of lamentation, because you are lamenting for this body. Those who are learned, who know what is matter and with his spirit, they would not be lamenting for such things. One does not lament for the temporary who's learned. Just like if you had like a kid, when he gets ice cream, he is very blissful. But then when he devours the ice cream, then he is lamenting. But that is a foolish lamentation. That is the nature of ice cream. That very quickly will disappear into the stomach. That is the nature of ice cream. So that is the nature of all sense gratification. It's very fleeting like that. Now you see it, now you don't. So one who is learned will not lament for such things, knowing that to be the nature of the thing. Just like if I can't think of an example. Maybe if you go to the amusement park and you get on one of the Six Flags Great America, and you get on one roller coaster ride there. I don't remember the roller coaster rides anymore. I used to know all of them very well. The Tower of Terror, maybe that's one. Tower of Terror means a ride. It just takes you way up in the sky, and then it just sits there. And you're always anticipating when it's going to fall, you know. You brace yourself, but it just sits there for a long time. So then you like lax up a little bit, like, what's taking so long? And then as soon as you do like that, it falls down. So then if someone vomits, the nature of the thing is that you should not eat before getting on such a ride. Because if you drop, your stomach drops like that, then you're going to vomit everything. So if you begin to vomit and you start lamenting for that, that is your foolishness. Because that is the nature of the thing. That is the nature of the ride. So you will be unhappy eating before getting on the ride. Similarly, if you put your hand in fire and you get burned and then you start lamenting about that, that is your foolishness. Because that is the nature of fire. So the same way Krishna is chastising Arjuna, that you're lamenting for something that's not worthy of lamentation, because you're lamenting for this body, which is not worthy of lamentation. So a real learned person, as Krishna goes on to explain, does not lament for the body in its living or in its dead condition. So in context of this Puranjana pastime, Puranjana is lamenting for the living. It's interesting, he's not so much lamenting the fact that he's about to die as much as he's lamenting the fact that who will give protection to my loved ones? How will they be protected? So this is a very prominent consciousness of the conditioned souls, lamenting for the welfare of those they cannot help. Such lamentation was also seen in Yudhishthira Maharaj when Dhritarashtra and Vidura left for home. So he began lamenting. He was also thinking, who will give, particularly to Dhritarashtra, who will give protection for my old grandfather, grandmother, who will protect them? So Narada Muni came and just gave him the sauce. Even though he was lamenting, Narada Muni gave him very strong words. If you read that section, Narada Muni does not speak exactly very sweetly, but he speaks also quite strong. And then he points out to Yudhishthira Maharaj that those who are lamenting, he says to Yudhishthira Maharaj, you're thinking, how will they be able to protect themselves without you? So Prabhupada makes a point there that this is all due to ignorance. If someone is thinking, without me, how would a living entity be protected? Then this type of consciousness is all due to ignorance. And then Narada Muni goes on to say a verse that I like a lot in that particular section. Kala karma gunadhino dehanyam pancha bhoktikaha katam anyam to gopayat sarpo grasta yataparam. So he makes this very nice point that this body, made of five elements, the body that you will use to protect others, you want to protect others' bodies with your body. That is a whole concept of protection. With my body, I will protect other bodies. So Narada Muni points out that this body, dehanyam pancha bhoktikaha, this body made of the five elements, is under the control of kala, karma, and guna. These three things. Kala, karma, it's under the control of kala, karma, and guna. Katam ayam su gopaya. Therefore, my dear Yudhishthira Maharaj, he's asking him, therefore, how will they give protection to others? It is itself under the control. How will they give protection to others? Sarpo grasto yataparam. When it is in the jaws of the serpent as much as others. Just like that image just reminds me of when the coward boys saw Agasura and then they were trying to make out, is it a snake or is it a cave? And then they couldn't make out. They said, anyway, we want to play. So even if it is a snake, Krishna is there, he'll save us. So let's go and play. So anyway, they're all in the snake's mouth. So imagine you can try to pick, we're all in the snake's mouth, and we all figure out, oh, it's a snake, we're about to be devoured. I'll protect you, but you're also in the snake's mouth. You're also about to be eaten just like me. How will you protect me? Or if we're both drowning in the ocean, and I say, Prabhu, I'll help you, then you say, Hare Krishna. How will you help me? Oh, that is not very practical. So that is what's going on in the material world. Everyone is drowning in the ocean of samsara without any information, without a boat to save them. Vishama vishayatoye majatam aplavanam. They're all drowning in the ocean of sense enjoyment and aplavanam without any boat to rescue them. And they're saying, I will help you, I will protect you. So then Narada Muni points this out to, how will you get protection? You are as much in the jaws of the serpent as everyone else. And everyone else, what is that situation? You're under the control of Kala, Karma, and Guna. So Prabhupada is a very beautiful purport there. Karma means we want to be protected. Everyone is looking for shelter. Everyone wants shelter. Sometimes we hear classes about how women need shelter, but we all need shelter. In one sense, because we're all women, in one sense, because we're all Prakriti, in that sense. Everyone needs shelter. And the problem is, where do we go to find that shelter? Because without shelter, then the consciousness is overcome by fear. We're hearing about how the Yavanaraj, Kritadir Enam, he's Kritadir means his determination, never fails. So you'll find this out in the material world, that the constant situation is fear. And it's always threatening the jiva. Even sometimes when you get in a situation where you feel very much comfortable, very much protected, but within a second, the situation can change and you're again fearful. Fear is always the threatening the jivas in the material world. So even if we're looking for shelter so that we can become freed from that fear. Without any shelter, then you must be. Prabhupada would give a nice example that if they fly up into space, and even if they're going to the moon, they're landing on the moon and flying around, they cannot take shelter there. So after some time, you know, Prabhupada would also know, like vultures, they will fly into a space and be looking, where is Moscow? Because a vulture flies very high, but he's always looking at low things. So they will fly very high in space and think, where is Moscow, where is Moscow? And then they try to enjoy a little bit of time in space, but you cannot stay there. You cannot stay there. Finally, you need some shelter. You cannot take shelter of the moon. So finally, you have to come back down to Earth where you're thinking that there's some shelter there. So without shelter, one will be certainly always fearful. So then the question comes, to whom do we take shelter? So Narada Muni is pointing out the general tendency is to take shelter of others who are also being devoured by the serpent of Kala, Karma, and Guna. If someone is to protect us, just like if you go to an insurance company for protection, then negotiate. We should make our contract. Okay, if you're going to protect me, you're going to give some insurance for protection. I would like, first of all, that you should protect me from all my karmic reactions, which are the uparupta karmas that are about to manifest, and the parupta karmas, which are called, the parupta karmas that are just about to manifest are called bijam. So on the contract we should write, you should be able to protect me from all bijams coming up. There's the bijam of the material desire, and there's the bijam that's just about to manifest. There's two. So you should be able to protect me for all the aparabdha and parabdha karmas manifesting. Can you do that for me? You know, and then they, well, we can't check that. Okay, I'll forgive you for that one then. Can you protect me from time, which is going to crush everything? It is actually time which is delivering our karma, right? Because if time didn't move, then karmic reactions wouldn't fructify. So then, if someone is to give protection from karmic reactions, they should also be able to stop time from moving. So you ask them, I want you to be able to stop time. You should protect me from time factors, movements. Oh, sorry, we cannot protect you from that either. So, then the threefold miseries are coming. So, can you at least protect me from the threefold miseries? So what type of protection will anyone offer? The answer is no, no, no across the board. So what protection can anyone offer in this world? Just like if you commit a crime, suppose we commit a crime, then the police are coming after us and they find us eventually. Can our mother protect us? Can our friends protect us from the wrath of the police? No one can protect, because now you're under the jurisdiction of the law. So in the same way, our karmic reactions are like that, like policemen coming to take us away or give us various reactions. And who can protect us from that? Who can protect us from the threefold miseries? So we're looking for shelter of jivas that cannot give us this protection. Prahlad Maharaj also says a similar verse that's coming to mind. Balasya neha sharanam pitaro narsimha. How's it go? Nartasya chagadam udhamati majato no taptasya tapratifidir yarihan jaseshtas tavavi bo tanubritam twarupekshitanam. Twarupekshitanam means those who are neglected by the Lord, or those who are neglecting their relationship with God. Then Prahlad Maharaj points out that due to a Bali concept of life, persons are very easily duped. Anjasa means easily, Ishta means easily duped by the various remedies offered by people in this world for protection. Very easily duped, you know, like the insurance companies, well, life insurance. What is the meaning of that? What is the meaning of life insurance? I mean, literally, what does it mean? I don't really. Huh? They pay someone else if you die. So you don't get anything out of that. You have to pay for that also. You don't get anything out of that. And generally, this might cause the speedy death, because I've seen stories where the wives would, depending on how large that life insurance was, they would make arrangements to feed their husbands rat poison. I saw this on TV. One lady fed her husband rat poison and he died so she could get the life insurance. Like this is going on in the material world. All types of nonsense is going on. Anyway, we get duped into these things. There's like people spend more money at a funeral than they do when the person is alive usually. This is also going on. This is insanity. How much money goes into a funeral? In India, it's a very logical program. Body is dead, throw in the Ganga. Put it on a thing, burn it up, you know? But in America, so much money is spent just to decorate the body. So much money would be spent. This is obviously called foolishness. And the living entities are easily duped into accepting such things. Why are they easily duped? Tanubritam. Prahlad Maharaj says, because of a Bali concept of life. They're very easily duped into accepting so-called remedies for help. Just like the modern scientists. They are always giving promises, post-dated check. We will protect you from death. And because of that, not because of that statement, but because you gave me a MacBook, so also you might be able to protect me from death, right? It seems very logical, isn't it? If you are providing me sense gratification, because try to understand that if you have two paradigms that you don't know, I usually the analogy that I give, it's a little mundane, but it's effective. For those of you who've seen this movie, The Matrix, so Neo has a choice between the red pill and the blue pill. So they represent different paradigms. One pill is Maya, another pill is, you know, Krishna consciousness. Not a very nice Krishna consciousness, you know. Being in Maya was better than being out of Maya in the movie, but I will think of it like that, Krishna consciousness and Maya. So you have two paradigms that you can choose. So how does Neo objectively choose one opposed to another? With knowledge. He doesn't know either paradigm. So how does he objectively say, I want this one opposed to that one, objectively speaking? He can't, right? It's not possible. So in the same way, people are accepting science and rejecting God. Prabhupada's speaking about this a little bit in the purport. They're accepting science, but they don't know either paradigm very well. Neither they know God consciousness, neither they know what the scientists are telling them. So how is it that they're able to place their faith in one paradigm opposed to another, when objectively, as they like to pride themselves about being very objective, objectively speaking, when they know neither paradigm very well, there's a way that it's done. The scientists are able to give various objects of gratification. And so then, due to a strong Bali concept of life, as Prahlad Maharaj is pointing out, Tanubritam, they accept that as an advancing culture, as a remedy for the problems of life. Just like if I'm giving you sense gratification, and someone else isn't giving you sense gratification, who are you going to like better, me or the other person? Probably you like me better, right? So then whatever I tell you, you might be inclined to just put faith in that because I'm giving you sense gratification. So in the same way, the mundane scientists and educators and so on, they provide one a lot of sense gratification, and that helps to engender faith in whatever they're saying, even if it's cheating, which it is cheating. So tanubritam, because they're having a strong body concept of life, they're easily duped into accepting taptasya tapratividir, means counteractions to suffering that are offered by these persons. And although they may have some temporary effect, they are ultimately impermanent. So then Prahlada Maharaj points out that if they are neglected by you, now why would Krishna neglect someone? Krishna is all merciful. Why would he neglect someone? Because Krishna's nature is yayatam mam prapadyante tam sutavya bhajamiham, that he reciprocates according to our approach toward him. So Srila Prabhupada makes a very nice statement in the first canto of Bhagavatam that for those who are taking an impersonal approach toward God, then Krishna does not take any personal interest. This is a very profound statement. For those who are taking an impersonal approach toward the Lord, they're dealing with Him impersonally, not wanting to have anything to do with neglecting Him, then Krishna does not take any personal interest. Because that is His nature. His nature is to reciprocate with the mood that we approach Him. So Twarupek Shritanam, those who are neglected by the Lord, because they themselves are neglecting to worship the Lord due to a strong body concept of life, then they are not able to offer protection for anyone. Then Prahlada Maharaj gives three examples. He says, a parent cannot protect their child, medicine cannot relieve you from a disease, and a boat cannot help you cross the ocean. So superficially speaking, it looks like a remedy, but if the Lord does not empower that person or that medicine or that boat, then it ultimately cannot save a person. So real protection is ultimately coming from the Lord. And the real duty of the parents or of the physician or of the captain of the ship is to inform everyone of the Lord's protection, that He is ultimately the protector. That is being mentioned, Prabhupada says in the first line, foolish people do not know that every individual soul is responsible for his own actions and reactions in life. So many times we're trying to give shelter to other living entities, not understanding that actually they are under the control of their karma and that we are not able to stop those reactions from coming. So we have a certain duty to them, Prabhupada's pointing out, to train them up in proper values. But after some time, it's the individual's responsibility to take up that responsibility for himself. Sometimes it is seen that, for example, in Prahlada Maharaj's verse, he's making the point, it is seen that parents, for example, parents don't give their children any freedom. Of course, in America, from time you're 7 or 8, you can do your thing. But especially in India, until you're 50, they're not giving any freedom sometimes. You know, 50 years old, they have to confirm everything from their mother. Is it okay if I practice Krishna consciousness? Okay, how serious can I get? Okay, only 2 rounds. Then you become the devotees, probably only 2 rounds because mom said only 2 rounds. Like that, their parents are giving any freedom. Why? Because they don't understand that actually you have the duty of training them up in their youth. Prabhupada's pointing that out here. In the youth, you have the duty, responsibility of training them up. But at a certain point, it is their responsibility to take on those principles or not take on those principles. And then understanding that you have the responsibility of yourself becoming fully Krishna conscious. There will always be some unfinished business in the material world. Srila Prabhupada told this in the matter of taking sannyas, that one is always thinking, well, this last duty, this last duty, this last duty, this last duty, this last duty. Let me just arrange this. Let me make sure this one isn't upset with me. Let me make sure. There will always be some unfinished business in the material world. It is never ending. So at what point will we become Krishna conscious? At what point will we see the necessity of correcting our relationship with Krishna? Just like we're many times when we have problems with the souls in the material world, then we spend a lot of energy wanting to correct that relationship, isn't it? It will consume our consciousness. But we've been averse to Krishna since time immemorial. Do we know how long time immemorial is? That's a long time. Time immemorial is like super long time. What is it, the bad relationship we're having with some jiva in this life? That is just an insignificant, 2-3 years? And that'll consume our whole, I have to correct that relationship, I have to fix it. But when it comes to Krishna, how many of us are concerned about correcting that relationship? Since time immemorial, we've been dissing Krishna. That's a, anyway, vernacular. We've had beef with Krishna. Since time immemorial, we've hated Krishna since time immemorial. Hated him. Icha dvesha samutena dvanda mohena bharata. I mean, icha means we desire. What is desire? The desire is to be Krishna. Why is Krishna enjoying like that? Why does he have to be the controller and the enjoyer? I want to be the controller and enjoyer. So as a result of thinking like that, who do we end up hating? Krishna. So we've been hating Krishna for since time immemorial. And the human form of life is meant for correcting that relationship. That's what the human form of life is meant for. Now, we can try to understand, when we're having some problem with jivas in this world, how much we will find it important to correct that relationship. Like, we made our mom upset, or we made our friends upset, or whoever. It'd be very important for us to make sure that that relationship is fixed. How many of us have the same intensity in correcting our relationship with Krishna? We do our... It cannot be a ritualistic thing. Just like if you have some riff with a devotee, you cannot just go over there and say, sorry, Prabhu, and it's finished. It doesn't work like that. You have to really invest like a lot of heart energy also. It can't just be words. You may have noticed that when there's a rift between, if you ever had this experience of a rift between a devotee, words are not very useful. You have to put in a lot of heart energy. I mean, they have to really perceive that you're meaning that. It won't be sufficient to say, I'm sorry, Prabhu, I'm sorry. It doesn't work. So in the same way, how much heart energy should we be offering to Krishna and correcting our relationship with him? It can't just be a matter of, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Finish, you know, then we leave the beat back somewhere, liberation, moksha. And then we do our rest of the day and we're like, where's my beat back? Sometimes this happens. We're so happy to be free with our chanting that, you know, we leave the beat back like, whew, like it was fire or something. And then at the end of the day, we'll be thinking, whoa, where did I keep the beat back? And then you'll be remembering, you have to like go deep into samadhi. Okay, recall. Oh, I left it in the temple room. I was so blissful to be free from chanting. So we can hardly think that such a mechanical approach to correcting our aversion to Krishna is going to be successful. In the same way that using words to correct the rift between a devotee will be successful. It will never be successful. And as Queen Kunti points out, that those who are not akinchana gotra, they're intoxicated by wealth, aristocracy, education, beauty. Edamana madapuman means they've taken shelter of those things. That is called inebriety, intoxication. They've taken shelter of those things. Then even they chant, they cannot do so feelingly. They cannot feelingly do it because they've taken shelter of those things. In the same way, if we're not putting real effort for correcting our aversion towards Krishna, then our chanting of Hare Krishna doesn't really count. How is it? Many times we criticize the Hindus and the Christians and, oh, they're just doing rituals. I'm like, everyone is doing rituals. We are also doing so many rituals. How many, many times you may be wondering how when Tosi Puja gets over, I immediately go and put the water in, immediately. Now, the reason I do that, because when we were trained up, they said as soon as the puja is over, you go and start circumambulating Tosi. That's how we were trained up. But generally because we know that usually we should wait for Yani Kani Chapapani like that. So everyone, we just do it. None of us maybe even thought about it. It was like, that's what it is, right? That's just how it's supposed to be. So I know when I do it, probably, and this may be some truth to this also, I'm not going to deny this, that, oh, he's so puffed up, he's thinking he's like a sannyasi. He just wants to go around before everyone goes so everyone can see, like that. But actually, no, after puja is over, we're supposed to immediately start circumambulating. That's how it is. That's how we were trained up. Chandramali Maharaj used to snap on us when we didn't do it, you know. I've been hearing that years and years and years and years because he used to just... He's like, why are you standing there? Because Yani Kani Chapapati hasn't come yet. So Maharaj will chastise us, you know. No, now you come. So that's why. Anyway. So the point is that, like, just like that, like with Tosi Puja, we have a very ritualistic approach to many of our Krishna conscious activities. Okay, I got to get in 1 hour of reading. You know, at least 1 hour. Prabhupada said at least read 1 hour. So we just read. Like that. And after 1 hour reading, you didn't remember or understand anything. Because we were just reading, it became a ritual. So we have our rituals also. We can hardly expect that's going to correct the aversion to Krishna. And correcting the aversion to Krishna takes heart work and not just lip work. It takes a lot. It's chanting from the heart or with the heart. Otherwise, what's being discussed here is that atat arhanam. What happens is we'll be lamenting for that which is not worthy of lamentation due to our absorption in intelligence, which is miserly. And intelligence is miserly, as we hear from the Bhagavad Gita, is an intelligence that does not use the human form of life to solve the problems of life, and therefore quits the body like cats and dogs without understanding the real principles of self-realization. Many times people want to bring the scope of their material duties into the realm of sadhana, as if that is the all-important aspect of sadhana, bhakti. Making sure that all parents are taken care of, children are taken care of, ad infinitum, the duties go on expanding. And this is due to miserly consciousness, miserly intelligence, that we do not understand the real principles by which we can actually advance in Krishna consciousness. The human form of life, all the ashrams, human form of life begins with varnashram, and all the ashrams are meant for helping us become progressively detached from all these affairs, not progressively entangled in all these affairs, progressively detached. So Paranjana's situation is that he has not followed the Dharma which will engender that, he has not followed Dharma properly by which that detachment was engendered. So this happens, we have to see, one has to examine to what degree we are becoming detached from all these affairs. Detached doesn't mean callous or negligent, but detached, because the problem is at the time of death, as what is being mentioned here, because of not becoming detached, he is meditating, oh, how would they be protected? Who will protect them? And in this way, he's quitting his body, thinking of his wife. So those who are intelligent, Prabhupada's concluding the purport here, that those who are intelligent, they use this human form of life for making spiritual progress. The Kripana consciousness means that we Prabhupada's using the word over-concern ourselves with the welfare of our family or the welfare of society, etc. We over-concern ourselves, thinking how we will give the protection. Even if we were able to protect them, we've just discussed two verses from the Bhagavatam that shows we are not able to protect them from anything. But even if we were able to protect them, that protection does not engender spiritual consciousness. One time a student wrote like Luke, and he was saying, I have made a protest about, I criticized material welfare activities. And of course, Indian, he was from India, he was very upset about this, and he was in the part of the Madhvacharya line. So he did not appreciate the criticism of welfare activities. So he pointed out, he said, nowhere in the Vedic culture does it teach that by welfare activities you will become entangled in Maya. So he wrote to Bhakta Luke at that time. So I responded to the mail also, because he had a lot of criticisms. That was one of them. So I responded to the mail, and I asked him a question. I said, okay, if we dedicate all our life's energy to welfare activities, will we get liberation? And he's a part of Madhvacharya's line, so I would hope he would know at least something. Will we get liberation by dedicating all our energy to the world? No. So how is it not entangling? How is it not entanglement in Maya by doing that? That means that the welfare, and if the answer is yes, then why do sadhana? If the answer is yes, you can get liberation just by welfare activities, then why chant Hare Krishna? Bill Gates is the best welfare worker in the world. He means he's Mahabhagavata, because no one can be a better welfare worker than him, because he has a lot of money. And he's going back home back to Godhead because of their welfare activity. But that's not the truth either. So neither by dedication of one's energy to the welfare of society does that engender spirituality. Of course, sometimes people think, they take that for granted, that that is spiritual. Just by helping people eat, helping them get shelter and so on. But we have not seen the improvement of the society as a result of such activities. When God consciousness is neglected, then the society will dry up and degrade despite all watering attempts, Srila Prabhupada has taught. Just like if you don't water the root of the tree, then despite all watering attempts of each individual leaf, the tree will die. So in the same way, when the principles of God consciousness are neglected due to the Kripana consciousness, and all energy goes for welfare of the family, then despite all watering attempts, the individuals will dry up and we will also dry up. Just like sometimes the parents, They become so absorbed in the material welfare of their children that their children become sense gratifiers. So they lose their own Krishna consciousness in an attempt to make them happy. And as a result, their children, because they're sense gratifiers, they also don't know the principles of taking care of the family properly. That's usually their hope, that if I train them up in this way, then when I'm old, they'll take care of me. But what happens is they throw them in old age homes because they were only trained for sense gratification. So taking care of the parents would be like a big, obstacle to enjoyment. So just throw them in an old age home, see them once a month, twice a month. In certain cases, it may be necessary, but I'm sure in many cases it's not so necessary. But because that's how they were trained, they throw their parents in an old age home. So the parent becomes a double loser. They lose their child whom they were trying so hard to protect. They lose their child, and they also lose their own Krishna consciousness. So we're being warned here not to be so foolish, but to take care of our duties in a timely manner. Krishna has arranged everything that at a certain time things should be done for those who are materially attached. And the main duty of all persons, as is being quoted here by Srila Prabhupada, is to cultivate remembrance of Krishna's Jama Karma, which is transcendental. Jama Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yoveti Tatuta. Prabhupada said this is the real purpose of the human form of life. That we have to understand in truth about Krishna's birth and activities. That is the actual purpose of this human form of life. So we have auxiliary duties which give support to that main purpose of our existence. And we have to see how much we are understanding this Krishna consciousness in truth. Of course, part of the understanding in truth is how much energy are we dedicating to the principles of devotional service. Because Krishna teaches, bhaktya mam abhijananti, yavan yash chasmi tatuta. Only by the pure devotion rendered to him can we understand him in truth. So it's saying here, understanding Krishna's jama karma in truth. Tatuta, in truth, understand it. That means how much we are deeply absorbed in devotional service. At a certain stage of maturity, we have regulated, let's say, regulated levels of absorption. Okay, I got to get my 1 hour of reading per day. You know, otherwise, you know, I'm disobeying Srila Prabhupada, etc. But as we're getting older and older and older, and we're becoming we're being attacked by invalidity and so on, then we may want to wonder how much more important it will be to become more and more absorbed and just hearing and chanting and remembering about Krishna at that point in our life. Because in our youth, Prabhupada also has told like this, in our youth, we have so much energy, we should try to do something for Krishna. Because we have so much energy, what we will do with all that energy? We'll simply think of illicit sex and all these things like that. With all that energy, if it's not properly engaged, then it gets engaged necessarily the other way. So all that energy should be engaged, Prabhupada said, work now, samadhi later. So working hard for Krishna. But as we're getting older and all that energy is becoming, reduced in terms of physical capacity and so on, then we should be having more and more taste for Krishna so that we can think of Krishna at the time of death. That is our cultivation. That is what the Krishna Consciousness Movement is teaching. Otherwise, if we have this tendency to, the word I'm going to use here is keep a balanced life. This is a very popular word. Let's be balanced. We have to be balanced, you know. And you hear this a lot from our devotees also say that we should be balanced. In America, they call it the middle path in Buddhism. The middle path means you do sense gratification also and you be a spiritual person also. A little bit of drinking and don't drink too much. But take the middle path, whatever that means. That means do sense gratification. So this is the whole concept, be a balanced person. And our devotees also have this. Yes, you should do Krishna conscious, but you should be balanced. One should be very balanced. And balance, you know, usually in the neophyte stage means 90% of the time spent for material maintenance and 10% of the time spent for ritualistic Hare Krishna chanting. So that is obviously not a very balanced program. And balance should at least mean 50-50, you know, in the neophyte stage. But in this, when we're getting older and we're attacked by invalidity, where fear is about to come and steal away our consciousness, then balance means 100% Krishna. That's called a balanced life, 100% absorption in Krishna. Otherwise, there's an imbalance that will cause fear to steal away our consciousness. This is a very dangerous thing. The time of death is such a fearful thing because you're losing all your attachments at once, as we were hearing earlier. That fear has its power to steal the consciousness away from Krishna. And we even have that experience now when we get afraid of something. Like sometimes we have ghosts in the temple. So sometimes if you wake up in the middle of the night, you feel you open the hallway door, you feel a little bit nervous sometimes. And you can easily forget Krishna. Of course, fear is supposed to help augment Krishna consciousness, but usually because of the material conception of life, we just get, the heart starts palpitating, you just run to the bathroom, do your thing, and run back, or something like that. This goes on. So fear has its power to steal the consciousness away. So if we haven't seriously cultivated our Krishna consciousness before the time of death, then the time of death is such a fearful thing that it steals the consciousness away. And that, so normally, sometimes people think, like one devotee was telling during the Christmas seminar, that he had some sickness in India, so he was thinking that, he's like, okay, I'm going to get ready for death, because he thought he was going to die. So he had his cell phone playing, he had pictures of Srila Prabhupada everywhere, so he was describing like this, I'm going to get ready for death, you know. And then he's like, okay, I'm ready, I got it, you know, I'm ready. And then he realized he wasn't able to think of Krishna. He was so afraid, you know. Because it's a scary thing, you're a young person, you have to cope with the fact that you might die. It's a scary thing. So he realized that remembering Krishna was not so easy. Sometimes we think, oh, I'll just remember Krishna at the time of death. But one who has not practiced Krishna consciousness during his life and become fearless by such practice, then he will not be able to be fearless at the time of death, like Dhruva Maharaj. And that fear has his power to just snatch the consciousness and take us to our next material body. So we have to see, if we're afraid of losing our material attachments, someone's afraid of losing their kids, so apparently losing their kids. Someone's afraid of losing their false egos. Someone's afraid of losing their anarthas. You know, sometimes we hold on to our anarthas. No, stay with me only. So then, by such fearful consciousness, we have to remain in the material world. So we have to see how much are we becoming absorbed in Krishna and how much we are becoming fearless by such absorption so that we can give up miserliness. Miserly intelligence. Otherwise, we will have to lament for that which is not worthy of lamentation, take another material body. So this Puranjana pastime is very edifying in many ways, at least on an intellectual level. Now, as far as application is concerned, that's up to us, I guess. So does anyone want to add anything or question anything? No? Oh. Well, generally, my simple understanding is that it's hard for us to take shelter because we think we're God. And in short, if I'm not God, no one's God. No, in other words, no one can give me shelter. Or sometimes it happens that, there's God, there are bona fide gurus and devotees who can give us shelter, but I'm not associated with any of those. Or, yes, they're bona fide, but they won't be able to help me because I'm so fallen. You know, I'm beyond being the ability of being helped. And this is why we have various doubts. And also, we have to understand that we're also suffering from unlimited samskaras of being betrayed in the material world. And that those certainly play a role in our mentality towards authority and towards surrendering to authority, etc. We have, probably in this life itself, we have many samskaras of being betrayed or where we felt hurt by a superior or authority. And so generally due to lack of strength and a forgiving mentality, then we carry that experience to all the future exchanges. Just like someone, like if a friend really, really, really like did something very wrong to you and betrayed you. So there's some scars created, and your future friendships, you'll be remembering that. So you may interact as a friend with the person, but you won't want to reveal too much because, you know, I don't want to go through this experience again. This is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha, Manmaya Mama Pashita. Krishna says there are three things we have to overcome: attachment, fear, and anger. So the fear is the fear of being a person, Srila Prabhupada teaches there. We're afraid of being a person because of the bad experience of so-called personhood in the material world. So it makes it very difficult to want to be a person in the spiritual concept. We imposed our material experience onto the spiritual relationships, the spiritual reality, and it makes it very challenging to surrender. Of course, attachments are there as well. So oftentimes it is rather intuitive that if we're going to surrender to a relationship, that means attachments are going to be cut. It's intuitive. It's just like one guy came here one time. I met him on book distribution, and he was very interested. So I invited him to Ratha Yatra. He came from Ratha Yatra also, and he really appreciated the experience there. So then we met on Tuesday, and he came to the temple. We took him to show them around, gave him prasadam. So we were talking. We were having a very nice conversation. And then he said, well, what do you all, is renunciation important for spiritual life? That question came up. Well, what about renunciation? His name was Michael. He was an actor. He said, well, what about renunciation? Do we have to become renounced? I said that is intuitive, that spiritual life means renunciation. But I said, it is not the grit the teeth renunciation. It's the higher taste. If there is something that you're experiencing, something deeper and tastier, then naturally you give up attachments which are not very healthy. And then after that, his whole face became and then we didn't see him again after that. You know, so what to do? You know, I tried to like say it as nicely as I was like, which was uncommon for me, I was like trying to present it very like nicely, you know. I said, I should have just stuck to heavy and at least but and he, so attachment is there, so it is rather intuitive that spiritual life means letting go of certain attachments. Spiritual relationship means letting go of material relationships. So then, because the material relationships are very powerful, because that's the ones we've identified with since our whole material existence, and those attachments reinforce our self-conception, so letting go of those material relationships is like letting go of myself. And that seems kind of frightening. So therefore, to surrender to the spiritual relationship becomes a bit of a challenge. And then there's anger. Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha. Anger, Prabhupada teaches, because of seeing so much hypocrisy, seeing so many persons betrayed. Just like when I joined the temple, all devotees, brahmacharis, that were so-called brahmacharis, that were living here at that time, they told me, you should work for 2 years and keep a bank account. And I was like super naive. I was like, well, Srila Prabhupada doesn't teach that in his books. You know, they said, but ISKCON won't protect you. That was what they were telling me. And I'm the new guy on the block, you know, and this is what they were telling me. Well, ISKCON won't protect you. And then, you know, when we got sick, and then ISKCON wasn't there to protect us. And I inquired from them. Now, I'm sure I wasn't so surrendered. I was idealistic. That's the one thing about being young that's nice in a certain way, is that you're very idealistic. So you might just surrender to Krishna as a result. I mean, idealistic, you know. So that happened in my case. I was saying, well, anyway, Krishna will give all protection. And even if I have to be homeless, like for me, I think homelessness was the big thing. Like, what if I'm homeless? That was a big fear that they engendered in me. What if I'm homeless? So I was thinking about that. I said, well, if I'm homeless, at least I have Chani and Bhagavatam. So that's a plus up from where I was at. Now, I'm pretty sure I wasn't so surrendered, but my mind somehow other conjured up that type of thinking pattern. So then I just, you know, just joined the temple like that and not minding that type of thing. So what happens is we generally hear about these type of things, and then you can go and go to ISKCON and, you know, all the first 1,000 things would be all horrible things about ISKCON. because they make sure to write a lot of prajalpa. And then you read all those things and you become so angry by the amount of hypocrisy and betrayal and deceitfulness that, oh, I don't want to join this. I don't want to have to do. Oh, they're just trying to manipulate. You start to impose all those things you've heard. You start to impose, oh, they're just trying to manipulate me so they can exploit me later on, like that. So then Krishna makes this point, Vidaraga Bhayakroda, Mamaya Mama Prashritaha, Bahavo Gana Tapasa. He said, we have this work of conquering over attachment, fear, and anger, which is not an easy, as I've just described, you can obviously understand it's not so easy to overcome that. So how does one do that? Bahavo Gana Tapasa. He should take up the austerity of cultivating transcendental knowledge. Just like, I don't think my mother will see this, but I remember my mother when I joined ISKCON. This was really timely. I was hanging around the devotees, and then 1 week, the devotees kind of shared with me all the dirty laundry of ISKCON. And I was like, oh, I can't believe that, you know? Then I said, anyway, that had nothing to do with Srila Prabhupada's teachings like that. So 1 week after that, it was really timely how Krishna timed it. My mother, like, found all these things. She gave it to me. Read this. So I was reading all these horrible things that happened in ISKCON and so on. And I said, oh, I already know about all of this. How can you be a part of this then if you know all these things? Huh? Why? Because of the transcendental knowledge has nothing to do with these things. Rather, those things are proving that the transcendental knowledge is true. Like many times I joke that when I read this verse, Manusha Nam Sarha Shishu, Kashyat Yatati Siddhaya, that out of many thousands among men, hardly one is a Gyani, and out of many thousands of such Gyanis, hardly one knows me. True. I thought this verse is not true because so many people are joining the movement. So this verse is not true. Then later on, when you came to find out all these things, I said, oh, now it makes sense, you know. One devotee even asked me, he said, how do you deal with all the deceitfulness and duplicity that you see this kind? I said, I get rather inspired. And he said, how can you say that? He got frustrated. He was a god brother. He said, he was recently initiated, and I met him 2 weeks after he was initiated. He was initiated, first initiation, when I took second, same time. So I met him like a few weeks after that. So he was asking me all these questions. And I said, I get rather inspired. So he was totally fried with me when I said that. And he said, how can you say such a thing? I said, because now I see Krishna's words are true. Otherwise, I was having a little doubt that maybe Krishna doesn't know what he's talking about because so many people are joining. But then these things, in other words, bahavo gana tapasa. If we do the real work of keeping our attention on the words of Sri Guru and on the instructions of the founder, Acharya, and understanding those things, then there's no question of being bewildered. And we can very gradually get purified and cross over attachment, fear, and anger. In other words, by the process of hearing, then we will get the confidence to actually surrender to Krishna. Otherwise, if we want to hear about these other things, then we lose our confidence in the surrendering process. Like that. Okay, last thought.
So, what is the role of pure relationships?
Remind us of Krishna.
You know, so how to approach when you're in a position
of maybe assisting or facilitating the development of a person's Krishna consciousness who is maybe less experienced than us. What about that role?
I can't say I know all the principles perfectly well. One thing is that we have to encourage devotees in their relationships with their spiritual masters, with their, let's say, mentors, etc. If we would be in such a position, then it's very important for people to encourage people in their particular direction that they're surrendering and not try to manipulate or create doubts in their mind and so on. That is a real friend. Because already there are so many bogus people out there to be misleading. And therefore, to actually get any little faith to move forward is a very tough thing. So then we have the service of helping each other get more and more faith so that we can more and more surrender. So as a friend, if one were to be in that position, then he should act in such a way and speak in such a way and even think in such a way as to how they could increase that person's faith and, you know, guru, sadhu, like that, and God. In that way, that is a very nice friend. And not unnecessarily create doubts in their mind. Especially the tendency is if you have a problem with the institution or with a particular leader or something, then the tendency is to just and just spray it out to everyone and create a lot of insecurity. And that way, all that faith that was took so long to, you know, come up gets crushed very easily in the neophyte stage. And we should just try to be Krishna conscious because, to be real, if we're not a very advanced devotee, then to internally assume the position of assisting someone and all these things is a very dangerous mentality. Because we are, like we were saying in the middle class, if I'm drowning, what we will do for others? So it doesn't mean we don't preach, you know, it doesn't mean we do the book distribution, we talk to persons and so on. But we can always inform them of our present situation as a fallen conditioned soul. And we can show that how we're being inspired in Krishna consciousness and in that way help to engender their own inspiration in Krishna consciousness. But generally, one should not assume himself such a great personality as to be assisting someone and becoming God conscious. After all, I'm not God conscious.
Sorry, but I just have a follow-up to the first part about peer roles. Seems there's also a little difficulty because this idea that I'm helping my peers remember Krishna, then maybe I'm thinking at some point, oh, it looks like so-and-so is not remembering Krishna so well right now, I need to intervene. And
no,
help.
That is a devotee's, that is a relationship. Not that, oh, he's remembering Krishna, now I won't, he doesn't need me to help him remember Krishna. Oh, now he's not remembering Krishna, now he needs my help to remember. No, devotee friendship means reminding a person of Krishna. You go to the bathroom, you see a devotee putting on tilak, that is reminding a person of Krishna. You chant Hare Krishna, you read Bhagavatam instead of newspaper on the train, you know, and help remind people of Krishna. So it's not just like a very mechanical, oh, he looks like he's forgetting Krishna, let me go over there and help him, you know. No, our very lifestyle is to engender remembrance of Krishna. That's what the lifestyle is. And that's what the duty is. The duty is, in other words, we should not be thinking, remembering, speaking, anything that doesn't help remind a person of Krishna somehow or some way. Even if the person is remembering Krishna, we should say, I learned this verse today in Bhagavad Gita, it was very nice. You know, if you want to have an exchange like that or something. And that is a relationship, it reminds a person of Krishna. So it's not like, if you're having that way of thinking about it, oh, looks like he's not remembering Krishna, let me go over and help him out. We should be concerned, red alarm. We should rather think everyone is remembering Krishna much better than me, and therefore I need their help. That is a relationship. There is no other relationship between a devotee. That is a relationship. Remind the person of Krishna. That is what it is. So, okay. Oh, Glenn, for a moment to say.
You had mentioned, Prabhu, that there are three things we have to overcome, attachment, fear, and anger. And
Krishna says that.
Then you're wise.
Yes, Krishna is very wise. Yes.
Krishna is very wise. And the word overcome, what does it mean? I guess when I see myself struggling, like I know sometimes I really lean on my guru. It's like, I can't do this, I need help. I mean, but
you
what does it mean
put the mic to
take control or to overcome?
He's asking what does it mean to take control or overcome, but because when he's struggling, then a tendency to really lean on the guru, all those things. Which I don't see what is wrong with that, but it depends on what your idea of leaning is. Leaning on the guru means leaning on his instructions, especially because guru is not, the Vapu is not around. So we should know that guru, like Krishna, is not limited. There's a very important conception that has to be awakened in our heart, that just as Krishna is not limited, guru is also not limited to a bodily form. Our guru is manifest everywhere. It's just a matter of vision. It's just a matter of love. Just like the devotee in love with Krishna, he sees Krishna within and without, everywhere he goes. And the same way, those who will be loving their gurus, they can see their guru, and particularly their guru's instructions, manifest everywhere. Just like the Avadhut Brahmana, he had 24 gurus, but the message of that pastime is to show that he was always remembering his guru's instructions. So when he was seen like a bee, that bee will remind him of some instruction that he received from his guru. And that way he was seeing his guru manifest everywhere. So if leaning means that, then leaning on guru is very good. And leaning on guru is going to get us out of the material world. Otherwise we have to stay. And so overcoming means to adhere strictly to that spiritual sound vibration within the heart and within our lives. And then gradually we move past those things. Means in the beginning, when there's strong attachment, it will be a little pinching. It's a proportion to strength of attachment. So letting go is always tougher the stronger the attachment is. But anyway, we may have started the process of letting go, even though it pinches. And then we lean on that sound vibration of guru. And of course, of the devotees around us who are also giving support to that sound vibration. And that way, cross over like that. It's hard for everyone. It's hard for everyone. So the method is the same for everyone also. Just hear, and cross over.
You spoke about fearlessness, and I was wondering, what is the... Fearlessness is easy to conceive of, like in Prahlad Maharaj's case when he's being attacked by so many demons. But in the community of devotees, can you say something about what it means to be fearless?
How is it any different in the community of devotees? Conceptually speaking,
what kind of fear do we cultivate? What is a healthy fear to have around devotees?
Well, we can take Prahlad Maharaj's example also. He had a fear of the material existence, being a victim of the material existence. In chapter is 10, when Narasimha is about to give him benedictions, so he prays to Lord Narasimha at that time that I'm already a demon and therefore inclined to sense gratification, but I'm very afraid of this material existence. He says it also in his prayers with Narasimha in chapter 9, where I'm not afraid of those teeth and those nails and that garland of intestines you got around your neck. I'm not afraid of that either. But I am afraid of Maya, the material existence. That famous story is there where Srila Prabhupada was talking about how the pure devotee never falls down. Oh, it was a morning walk, in fact, and how the pure devotee never falls down. Jai Prabhupada. And then they go to greet the deities, and then Prabhupada's praying to the deities, may I never fall down. And one disciple was seeing that. So when Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, you just gave morning why, how beautiful he never falls down. And Prabhupada says, now you know why. And that is the difference between you and I. You will not pray that you'll be protected from Maya. But I'm always praying for Krishna's shelter. Many times we get confident. Like Prabhupada said, my Western disciples have a tendency to flirt with Maya. I think I'm going to try it out. I think I'm ready for it this time. And then Maya, she loves those type of persons the best. So we can pray for protection from being victims of material illusion. Now, generally, a devotee won't be a victim of material illusion if he's in the association of devotees, strong devotees. So then we might have a fear of committing aparad because aparadam is very strong tendency in Kali Yuga. And if one commits offenses, then the floodgates of material desires just pour in the heart. And one, again, finds himself totally attracted to Maya. So we might pray for being fearful. You're saying, what is a healthy fear to cultivate? A fear of committing offenses. And especially writing about it, and putting it online for all the world to see. That is most offensive. First of all, to write it down is very offensive. And then to post it for the whole world to see, across the world, thousands or maybe even millions of people see it within 2 seconds, that is most offensive. That's probably as offensive as you can get. So if we want to talk about healthy fears to cultivate, being afraid of offenses should be one that's very prominent in our consciousness. Rupa Goswami lost darshan of he was observing the Leela of Krishna helping Radharani to pick one Kadamba flower and in his samadhi, his bhakti samadhi. And then he was holding her, and then when she held on to the tree, apparently the Kadamba flower is very hard to get off. So she was trying to pull it, holding on the branch, and then Krishna let go, and she went flying into the air, holding on to the branch, and then she got stuck on the tree. So naturally, that's very funny. So Rupa Goswami started laughing, naturally. That was because it's funny. And Krishna was having a good time, so everyone was laughing in the meditation. All the associates were laughing. And one crippled sadhu, Vrijabhasi, came by right at the time when he started laughing. So then he thought that Rupa Goswami was laughing at him. So then he felt very hurt by that. I thought this was supposed to be Goswamiji. Everyone goes to Vrindavan asking him, this is how he's treating me. So he laughed. And because of that, was an unknown. He was actually in Bhakti Samadhi. He was actually absorbed in Krishna, unlike us usually. And just because of that, Krishna removed the whole vision from his eyes, from his heart. So he was concerned, well, how did this happen? He went to his brother. This story apparently is told him anyways, the way I've heard it, is that he went to Sanatana Goswami and said, told him the story. So Sanatana Goswami only told him it was due to offense. So I was in samadhi, how am I supposed to understand who I offended? So Sanatana Goswami, the way I heard this story many times, I read about it also, is that he told him to have a festival and invite all the Vrijabhasis. And whichever Vrijabhasi doesn't come, then you know that one you offended. Just like we have a pizza party, everyone loves pizza. So if you offend someone, you have a pizza party, and they don't come, you know that devotee you offended. Because everyone cannot resist pizza. No one can resist. Even if you have a big, big feast, and pizza is there, oh, okay, one, two slice, like that. So if that devotee doesn't come, that means that devotee you offended. So that devotee didn't come. So Rupa Goswami couldn't make out, I offended him. And then the situation was corrected like that. So we can see that Rupa Goswami was actually absorbed in Krishna, but due to an unknowingly committing an offense, then Krishna removed himself from his heart. So if there's anything we can learn from these type of pastimes, there's so many pastimes like this. You know how I Haridas Thakur got beat in 22 marketplaces? You know, you've heard this pastime, of course, yes? Haridas Thakur got beat in 22 marketplaces. Now, in the purports that Bhaktisiddhanta gives on this, I just read it on Haridas Thakur's day when I was trying to remember him. You know the reason he got that happened, the purport that comes, is that because he tolerated offense to God and Vaishnavas. Because the Nawab of St. Shah was committing offense to the Lord particularly, and because in the name of Trinada, peace, and Nichena, he tolerated that without doing anything. So the reaction he got was being beaten in 22 marketplaces. Of course, that's the Leela. That's not a hard ass situation, but that's the purport that comes. You ready to get beaten in 22 marketplaces? Enough where the first marketplace should have killed the person itself. So then, and in this way, because of that offense, that happened. So like this, we can read about these things and try to become more and more and more cautious of even saying anything that's based on a speculation about a devotee, say anything due to some emotional upheaval. All these things go on. In the Kali Yuga, we're very much captured by offenses. So if we want to be, your question was, what is a healthy type of fear too? So this would be a very healthy fear to cultivate. We should be very fearful of offenses to devotees. Okay, we're going to end there. We can talk after the class, because I already went way over. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Mm-hmm.